is 5:20, and this is the KDLL Evening News for Thursday, January 8th, on 91.9 FM, Kenai Soldotna, listener-supported public radio for the Central Kenai Peninsula. I'm Ashlyn O'Hara. Thanks for tuning in. Coming up, a look back on the biggest Alaska news stories of 2025. But first, Homer residents gathered downtown at WKFL Park Tuesday to mark the anniversary of the January 6th attack on the U.S. Capitol 5 years ago. The Coalition for a Healthy Democracy organized the event, which included signs and music. The coalition is made up of various local groups and citizens, including the Citizens Action Network and Veterans for Peace. Coalition member Alex Copland says more than 30 people attended and called that day a travesty.
We felt like the whole insurrection at the Capitol was unbelievably ugly and it was unwarranted.
The Homer event coincided with the White House website being updated to describe the riot over the 2020 election results as a, quote, peaceful march, although several people died during or after the attack. President Trump has repeated claims since then that the election was stolen, but federal courts and investigators have found no evidence of widespread voter fraud to support that. In Washington, D.C., Democrats in Congress also marked the anniversary Tuesday with an unofficial hearing that included testimony from law enforcement about the violence at the Capitol that day. Copland, with the Homer Coalition, says about 15 people went to the Homer Public Library for a roundtable discussion after the event. Participants discussed the events of January 6th and concerns about the future of democracy. He says the coalition plans to host future discussions that include residents from across the political spectrum.
All sides coming together, right, left, and discussing this so we can have more of an open discussion, because I think a lot of times information doesn't get listened to because you're only listening to one side of the conversation. And that's the other thing we're always hoping to do, is bridge that divide.
Copland says the coalition plans to hold additional discussions ahead of future elections. For many, the new year signals a fresh start. But for Alaskans, it also means it's time to apply for the permanent fund dividend. Applications for the 2026 PFD opened January 1st. Over 600,000 Alaskans receive the PFD each year, which is usually paid out in October. It's not yet clear how much the 2026 dividend will be. In 2025, Alaskans received $1,000, the smallest PFD in state history when adjusted for inflation. The legislature and Governor Mike Dunleavy will determine the 2026 PFD amount during the upcoming legislative session. Dunleavy's budget proposal would pay roughly $3,600 to eligible residents, but passing it through the legislature is a long shot. It would require using about half of the state's savings, more than $1.5 billion. To be eligible for a PFD, you must be an Alaska resident for the entire calendar year and intend to stay in the state. Alaskans have until March 31st to apply. You can file online at mypfd.alaska.gov or pick up an application at any Permanent Fund Division office. And finally, across Alaska, 2025 brought stories that captured national attention, tested communities, and highlighted the resilience of the people who call this state home. Alaska Public Media's Wesley Early looks back at the moments that shaped the year.
The year began with one of the earliest national stories, the name of the country's tallest peak. On the first day of President Donald Trump's second term in office, he announced that he would change the name of Denali back to Mount McKinley. The move immediately sparked backlash from many Alaskans, including legislators like Maxine Dybert, a Koyukon Athabascan state representative from Fairbanks.
Denali is more than a mountain. It's a cornerstone of Alaska's history, a tribute to our diverse culture, and a testament to the people who have cherished this land for millennia.
U.S. Senators Lisa Murkowski and Dan Sullivan introduced legislation to restore the name to Denali, but so far, the president has not been persuaded. Still, for many Alaskans, the mountain will always be Denali. And believe it or not, another Alaska peak also caught the attention of the nation this year. Volcano researchers announced in March that Mount Spur, just 80 miles west of Anchorage, would likely explode. Matt Haney with the Alaska Volcano Observatory said it was showing many signs of unrest, increased gas emissions, more earthquakes nearby, and the inflation of the volcano's surface.
It's almost like we have a checklist of the usual signs that volcanoes give us before they progress to an eruption. And now we're seeing all four of those.
South Central Alaskans started preparing. A local pet store even reported a huge surge in demand for dog goggles. But as the weeks went on, to residents' relief, the volcano calmed down and did not explode. Our third story is not about a mountain, but rather a momentous meeting. President Trump met with Russian President Vladimir Putin in Anchorage in August with the goal of enacting a ceasefire in the Russian invasion of Ukraine. Alaska Public Media's Liz Ruskin and I spent hours on Joint Base Elmendorf-Richardson among hundreds of national and international press as the two world leaders met in private. When they finally addressed the media, they didn't really deliver on the ceasefire the U.S. president promised. Liz summarized Trump's remarks on Alaska News Nightly.
He said it was an extremely productive meeting, but there was no deal. And it was kind of a shock that the two leaders didn't take a single question.
Outside of the military gates, thousands of Alaskans protested the summit, many expressing support for the Ukrainian people. Joe Bennett was among hundreds who protested in Midtown Anchorage.
There needs to be no discussion about Ukraine without Ukraine present.
President Trump's cuts to the federal workforce also faced criticism in Alaska, where the federal government is, as one economist put, the number one industry. But it wasn't just employees who were concerned. Cuts to a number of federal agencies in the state, including the National Weather Service, could have rippling effects, said Adam White with the Alaska Airmen's Association.
Not get too dramatic, but it literally is a life safety issue for us to have accurate, current weather information and weather data.
The importance of weather forecasting in Alaska was front and center in October, when the remnants of Typhoon Halong hit western Alaska, unleashing hurricane-force winds and flooding that devastated several villages. Ryan Davis of Quigilingok described his home floating down a creek.
Yeah, the flood lifted us up, and I didn't think it was going to happen. And I'm like, I yelled at like my kids to get up and group up here on the stairs just in case we tip over.
One person died in the storm, and two remain missing. Hundreds of people, primarily of Yupik descent, were evacuated from western Alaska. Many ended up in Anchorage, where city and state officials worked to provide shelter, assistance, and donations. One Anchorage program, the Yupik Language Immersion Program at College Gate Elementary School, helped provide dozens of students with something else, a sense of normalcy.
Seeing other kids that are also Yupik or Native, and then hearing them be taught in Yuchtun, I think eases them even just a tiny bit.
That was Yupik immersion teacher Lorena Warren. Back on the coast, some Alaskans decided to stay to rebuild their storm-ravaged communities. In the village of Kipnuk, where state officials estimate 90% of structures were destroyed, Benjamin Kuktun said he and a small crew were taking it one day at a time.
We're going to stay here all winter. Well, I'm not going to leave Kipnuk. These boys ain't going to leave Kipnuk. So we can survive. We got hope.
Western Alaska faced another tragedy earlier in the year. Further north, a Bering Air flight from Unalakleet crashed on its way to Nome in February, killing all 10 people on board. The crash was one of Alaska's deadliest in recent history. Unalakleet resident Tony Hagen said the loss sent communities across the region into mourning.
When the region has something that occurs like this here, it doesn't only affect one community. I mean, we feel the pain region-wide.
As communities grieved, major decisions were unfolding hundreds of miles away in Juneau. For years, the state had kept education funding relatively flat, with districts losing teachers and students as they struggled to keep up with schooling needs. Legislators debated school funding for months, eventually settling on a significant increase of $700 per student. Governor Dunleavy then vetoed it, and in a rare step, the legislature overrode the governor's veto. Here's Senate Majority Leader Kathy Geisel, an Anchorage Republican.
I think people had the humility to listen to the public who have been crying for additional education funding now for several years.
But this year, Alaska wasn't only defined by political debate and tragedy. Our reporters brought stories from all corners of the state, celebrating the variety of ways people choose to make Alaska home. In Fairbanks, Alaska's first ever heat advisory forced locals to get creative to stay cool. For some, that meant hanging out with Dakota Brickley at the Fairbanks Ice Museum.
And I recommended they would need a jacket, and they said, no, we actually want it to be cold. We're like roasting outside.
The heat stretched to southeast Alaska, too, where for the first time, Mendenhall Glacier receded from Mendenhall Lake. It came as a surprise to University of Alaska Southeast glaciologist Jason Amundson.
That was the first time I had really thought, oh, it doesn't look like it's touching the lake anymore. And then there were some photos I saw on Facebook that confirmed it.
Meanwhile, in June, Alaskans from St. Paul Island held a softball game to commemorate the moment during World War II when the Army interrupted a baseball game to force locals to abandon the Bering Sea village. Residents were relocated to camps in southeast Alaska. Chloe Bordakovsky-Price said the game allows community members to engage with their island's history and learn to live with it.
My mentors have recommended that now in time that we get to choose our memories. So either that be good or bad, and I think our community is choosing happy ones moving forward.
And if you think you have a big mouth, a woman in Ketchikan might beg to differ. In April, Marie Pearl Zelmer Robinson became the official Guinness World Record holder for largest female mouth gape. Her mouth stretched to a jaw-dropping 7.28 centimeters.
Having a record for something is like making a fact for the whole world to learn from. And people look at that and they think, that's something that really exists. I wonder if I can do that.
Robinson wasn't the only Alaska champion this year. Jesse Holmes was all smiles when he won his first ever Iditarod Trail sled dog race a month earlier.
I should have never felt a down moment in my life. If I died tomorrow, I'd just die the happiest man.
And rounding out the winner's circle, the aptly named Chunk, bear number 32, claimed his first ever title as Fat Bear Week champion. Looking ahead to 2026, in Anchorage, I'm Wesley Early.
And that'll be all for tonight's KDLL Evening News. We had help from Simon Lopez and Homer, and from Ava White and Wesley Early in Anchorage. You can re-listen to this newscast and find our other stories online at kdll.org. I'm Ashlyn O'Hara. Have a safe and warm evening. Mm-hmm.